Okay, this is VOA 1. The hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Katie Weaver has a story about King Charles III's coronation, John Russell reports on the cleaning of Paris's Seine River for the Olympic Games, and Faith Perlow answers a question about subjects and objects in sentences. Later, we listen to Feathertop by Nathaniel Hawthorne. But first,
Britain continues preparations for the ceremony to recognize the rule of a new king. The coronation, or crowning, of King Charles III is set for May 6th. His wife, Camilla, will be crowned queen also. The last time Britain coronated a ruler was June 2, 1953, when 27-year-old Queen Elizabeth II was crowned. Her son Charles's coronation comes almost 70 years later, following the death of Elizabeth last September. The new king is aiming for a simpler event than the coronation of his mother, Buckingham Palace officials said. Plans call for a shorter path for the royal parade to Westminster Abbey, where the crowning takes place. But ancient traditions and historic royal possessions will still be shown. Charles and Camilla plan to travel to Westminster Abbey in a beautiful black and gold vehicle called a carriage. Horses will pull the carriage along the parade path. The carriage is the same one built for Elizabeth for the celebration of her 60th year as queen. Other royal objects to be expected in the ceremony include 5 swords and 2 scepters. The king will wear the so-called sovereign's ring. It is covered in mostly stones, such as rubies and diamonds. Sovereign is another word for ruler. Camilla is to wear Queen Mary's crown. It was made for the coronation of Mary Tuck in 1911. She was wife to Britain's King George V. Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, will lead the ceremony. Charles will be coronated with the St. Edward's crown, the central piece of the crown jewels. The crown is very heavy. It is made of 2.2 kilograms of solid gold set with valuable stones of many colors. After the ceremony, Charles will put on the less weighty imperial state crown for the parade back to the palace. Military troops on parade will salute the king and queen at Buckingham Palace, followed by 3 cheers from service members. I'm Katie Weaver.
The Seine River, the famous river that goes through Paris, has mostly been off-limits to swimmers since 1923. Although it has been the subject of art, books, and songs, the Seine was too toxic or poisonous for most fish and for people. Now, however, its green-brown waters are showing a rebirth. French triathlete Thibaut Rigaudot is already getting questions about his plans to swim in the Seine. "Are you scared of swimming in the Seine?" he said friends asked him. "It looks disgusting." A costly and complex cleanup is bringing back the Seine just in time for the 2024 Paris Olympics. Dan Angelescu is a scientist who is tracking the Seine's water quality for the city. He said the cleanup project will create waves across the world because a lot of cities are watching Paris. Angelescu added, "It's the beginning of a movement. We hope so, at least." The Olympic plans have sped up a cleanup effort that has taken many years. Without having to be ready for thousands of Olympians and Paralympians next year, city officials said it would have taken much longer to pay for the $1.5 billion effort. The Seine is going to be the center of Paris's Olympic opening ceremony. For the first time, the ceremony will take place not in a stadium, but along the sides of the river. So, the river needs to be ready. Officials have barred homes upstream of Paris and houseboats on the Seine from emptying their waste directly into the river. An Olympic law passed in 2018 gave moored boats 2 years to connect to Paris's sewerage system. Sewage treatment plants on the Seine and the Marne rivers are also being improved. The Marne River flows into the Seine and is its tributary. Paris officials say the water quality is already getting better. There are now more kinds of fish. Years ago, only 2 or 3 kinds were able to survive in the dirty water. Officials say samples taken daily last July and August in the part of the river where Olympians and Paralympians will compete showed the water quality was good. Swimming will be starting at the Seine's Alexandre III Bridge. Triathlon competitors will be the first. Men will race on July 30th, followed by women the next day. Then come marathon swimmers on August 8th and 9th, and paratriathletes on September 1st and 2nd. Rigaudot competed in paratriathlon at the 2021 Tokyo Games. He is looking forward to the events. He is hoping for an early taste of the experience when Paris holds swims in the Seine this summer to get ready for 2024. It will be Rigaudot's first-ever swim in his home river. "We will be the testers," he said. "I hope we don't get sick." I'm John Russell.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about subjects and objects. Hello, VOA Learning English. I am Noor Mohammed from Saudi Arabia. I have a question about subjects and objects in sentences. Are they the same thing? Thanks, Noor Mohammed. Thanks for writing to us, Noor Mohammed. Subjects and objects are not the same thing in English language sentences, but they both involve nouns within the structure of a sentence. Let's take a closer look at each to see how they work. The subject of a sentence causes the action described by the verb. Nouns, pronouns, and noun phrases are mainly used as subjects. Here is a simple example. The cat sleeps. The cat is a noun phrase and the subject of the sentence. The verb is sleeps. Subjects almost always come before their verbs in sentences. Other kinds of phrases can also become subjects of sentences. For example, a verb phrase can become a subject. One kind of verbal phrase is called a gerund, the ing form of a verb. It acts as a noun. This means that it can be the subject of a sentence. Walking is a great form of exercise. In this sentence, walking is a gerund and is the subject. It is not a verb. Other grammatical forms can be subjects too, like noun clauses and prepositional phrases. Now let's move on to objects. An object is another part of the sentence. Objects come after verbs. We say that the object of a sentence receives the action of the verb, or that the verb affects the object in some way. Objects are always nouns or noun phrases. This is something that is shared between the subject of the sentence and the object. But the two are not the same. Here is a simple example of an object. The cat eats food. In this sentence, food is the object. The food receives the action from the cat. It gets eaten. This makes food the direct object. It comes after the verb, and it is directly affected by the action of the verb. Here are some more examples of direct objects. I love drinking tea in the morning. Remember how gerunds act like nouns? Here, the verb phrase drinking tea is the object. We ate Thai food last night. Here, the noun phrase Thai food is the direct object. I baked Masha a cake. Here, the direct object of the sentence is a cake. But what about the other noun that comes right after the verb in the sentence? Masha is the indirect object. Indirect objects are affected by the direct object, and not the verb. Indirect objects need a direct object. So, in this sentence, we did not bake Masha. We baked the cake for Masha. Here are a few sentences to practice. Find the subject and the object. Direct and or indirect. Write your answers below in the comments or send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. Walking up too many hills hurts Oliver's back. We made our parents breakfast. Abdul bought his wife a new car. She writes long letters every month. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Noor Mohammed. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
We just heard Faith Perlow present this week's Ask a Teacher. Welcome back to the show, Faith.
Thanks for having me back, Dan.
Really liked this week's story about objects and subjects.
Me too. And I see what you did there.
What was that?
You dropped the pronoun I, the subject of the sentence. I do this a lot too. In very informal conversations, kind of like the one we're having now, it is common to not say the subject of the sentence, especially when we use the pronoun I. And with certain verbs like hope, love, like, and know.
That's really cool. Are there other times where we do not have a subject in the sentence?
Yes, for command clauses, also called imperatives.
Oh, like leave me alone, or make a right turn at the stop sign.
Exactly. Here, the pronoun and the subject is actually you. You make a right turn, or you leave me alone.
Well, I'll leave you alone for now, but be sure to come back next week.
I'll be back, Dan. See you then.
Our story today is called Feathertop. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
The long cold winter was gone at last. At first, the cold nights went away slowly. Then, suddenly, the warm days of spring started to come. There was new life again in the earth. Things started to grow and come up. For the first time, green corn plants began to show. They pushed through the soil and could now be seen above the ground. After the long winter months, the crows, the big black birds, were hungry, and when they saw the little green plants, they flew down to eat them. Old Mother Rigby tried to make the noisy and hungry birds go away. They made her very angry. She did not want the blackbirds to eat her corn, but the birds would not go away. So, early one morning, just as the sun started to rise, Mother Rigby jumped out of bed. She had a plan to stop those blackbirds from eating her corn. Mother Rigby could do anything. She was a witch. A woman with strange powers. She could make water run uphill or change a beautiful woman into a white horse. Many nights, when the moon was full and bright, she could be seen flying over the tops of the houses in the village, sitting on a long wooden stick. It was a broomstick, and it helped her to do all sorts of strange tricks. Mother Rigby ate a quick breakfast and then started to work on her broomstick. She was planning to make something that would look like a man. It would fill the birds with fear and scare them from eating her corn, the way most farmers protect themselves from those black, pesky birds. Mother Rigby worked quickly. She held her magic broomstick straight and then tied another piece of wood across it. And already it began to look like a man with arms. Then she made the head. She put a pumpkin, a vegetable the size of a football, on top of the broomstick. She made two small holes in the pumpkin for eyes and made another cut lower down, that looked just like a mouth. At last, there he was. He seemed ready to go to work for Mother Rigby and stop those old birds from eating her corn. But Mother Rigby was not happy with what she made. She wanted to make her scarecrow look better and better, for she was a good worker. She made a purple coat and put it around her scarecrow and dressed it in white silk stockings. She covered him with false hair and an old hat. And in that hat she stuck the feather of a bird. She examined him closely and decided she liked him much better now, dressed up in a beautiful coat with a fine feather on top of his hat, and she named him Feathertop. She looked at Feathertop and laughed with happiness. "He is a beauty," she thought. "Now what?" she thought, feeling troubled again. She felt that Feathertop looked too good to be a scarecrow. "He can do something better," she thought, "than just stand near the corn all summer and scare the crows." And she decided on another plan for Feathertop. She took the pipe of tobacco she was smoking and put it into the mouth of Feathertop. "Puff, darling, puff," she said to Feathertop. "Puff away, my fine fellow. It is your life." Smoke started to rise from Feathertop's mouth. At first, it was just a little smoke, but Feathertop worked hard, blowing and puffing, and more smoke came out of him. "Puff away, my pet," Mother Rigby said with happiness. "Puff away, my pretty one. Puff for your life, I tell you." Mother Rigby then ordered Feathertop to walk. "Go forward," she said. "You have a world before you." Feathertop put one hand out in front of him, trying to find something for support. At the same time, he pushed one foot forward with great difficulty. But Mother Rigby shouted and ordered him on, and soon he began to go forward. Then she said, "You look like a man, and you walk like a man. Now I order you to talk like a man." Feathertop gasped, struggled, and at last said in a small whisper, "Mother, I want to speak, but I have no brain. What can I say?" "Ah, you can speak," Mother Rigby answered. "What shall you say? Have no fear. When you go out into the world, you will say 1,000 things, and say them 1,000 times. And saying them 1,000 times again and again, you still will be saying nothing. So just talk. Babble like a bird. Certainly you have enough of a brain for that." Mother Rigby gave Feathertop much money and said, "Now you are as good as any of them and can hold your head high with importance." But she told Feathertop that he must never lose his pipe and must never let it stop smoking. She warned him that if his pipe ever stopped smoking, he would fall down and become just a bundle of sticks again. "Have no fear, Mother," Feathertop said in a big voice, and blew a big cloud of smoke out of his mouth. "On your way," Mother Rigby said, pushing Feathertop out the door. "The world is yours, and if anybody asks you for your name, just say Feathertop. For you have a feather in your hat and a handful of feathers in your empty head." Feathertop found the streets in town, and many people started to look at him. They looked at his beautiful purple coat and his white silk stockings, and at the pipe he carried in his left hand, which he put back into his mouth every 5 steps he walked. They thought that he was a visitor of great importance. "What a fine, noble face," one man said. "He surely is somebody," said another. "A great leader of men." As Feathertop walked along one of the quieter streets near the edge of town, he saw a very pretty girl standing in front of a small red brick house. A little boy was standing next to her. The pretty girl smiled at Feathertop, and love entered her heart. It made her whole face bright with sunlight. Feathertop looked at her and had a feeling he never knew before. Suddenly, everything seemed a little different to him. The air was filled with a strange excitement. The sunlight glowed along the road, and people seemed to dance as they moved through the streets. Feathertop could not stop himself and walked toward the pretty, smiling young girl. As he got closer, the little boy at her side pointed his finger at Feathertop and said, "Look, Polly, the man has no face. It is a pumpkin." Feathertop moved no closer, but turned around and hurried through the streets of the town toward his home. When Mother Rigby opened the door, she saw Feathertop shaking with emotion. He was puffing on his pipe with great difficulty and making sounds like the clatter of sticks or the rattling of bones. "What's wrong?" Mother Rigby asked. "I am nothing, Mother. I am not a man. I am just a puff of smoke. I want to be something more than just a puff of smoke." And Feathertop took his pipe and with all his strength smashed it against the floor. He fell down and became a bundle of sticks as his pumpkin face rolled toward the wall. "Poor Feathertop," Mother Rigby said, looking at the heap on the floor. "He was too good to be a scarecrow, and he was too good to be a man. But he will be happier, standing near the corn all summer, and protecting it from the birds. So I will make him a scarecrow again."
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.